satisfy you.
Welcome to Knotcast, episode 358. Bisexuals are werewolves.
We are.
I'm okay. Severin.
I'm Shiva.
I'm Fuzzwolf.
And we are here back at Casa del Gato. And,
I hadn't heard of that.
Enjoying hookah, and Shiva cooked a lovely dinner of pork chops with taters and broccoli. And it's been a very nice, like, we've been just catching up as friends for the past hour or so.
Yeah.
It's been super nice. And now we're going to record a podcast for you. I've got a whole list of topics on our note thing, and we're going to do our damnedest to completely ignore the nightmare political environment we're in.
Our
talk
hellscape.
About cool stuff.
Yeah.
Because I got cool stuff, and I mean, shit. You guys probably see enough of the political negativity on your Twitter feeds.
We don't have to roar about it.
Yeah.
Oh, in non-political bad news, Coca-Cola is getting rid of Coke Zero.
I know. I'm like,
yeah.
You hadn't heard?
Well, like, I'd seen it, but I didn't know if it was actually like a hoax or what.
No, it's real. They're going to reformulate, and they're releasing a new brand called Coke Zero Sugar, I think they're calling it.
No, it's Coca-Cola No Sugar.
Okay.
Which is sad, because that's like my go-to drink.
Yeah.
And here I am.
So, like,
a can of Diet Cherry Dr. Pepper.
Because that's what was on sale this week.
I will give it a shot, but I hope they don't. I hope it's not too dissimilar from Coke Zero, because I like the taste of Coke Zero.
See, for me,
I hate Diet Coke, so I was like,
I don't like Diet Coke. I like Dr. Pepper, it's fine. But I've just been buying the Big K, because I buy whatever's on sale. But I get, like, Pepsi Max, which is the with the aspartame potassium as a sweetener, or Coke Zero.
I don't mind Pepsi Max. I started drinking that over in Oz, and it tastes slightly different, but I like it.
I drink whatever's on sale,
yeah.
Or I just get the generic, like, whatever, special Big K. It was Big K.
I liked Diet Coke until Coke Zero came about.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got used to drinking Coke Zero, and now I'm like, if I have to have Diet, it's sort of like, you know, when you go to the restaurant, and, like, I used to not care when they're like, do you have this? No, we have this. Oh, okay, that's fine. Now when I order a Coke Zero and they're like, we have Diet Coke, I'm like,
water. I'd rather, like, because of my diabetes, I can't have sugar soda. So, and before I got diabetics, like, wow, how could anybody ever drink this shit? Diet's awful. Well, when you don't have a choice, and it's still not a great choice, you know, when you're kind of stuck between unsweetened tea, water, and that's about it. A diet soda is a nice differential because I can't drink juice.
Mm.
I can't drink soda. I have to be careful with any tea that's got sugar in it.
A shitload of Crystal Light, the 5-calorie.
Some of that's okay. Like, I like some of the Mio stuff.
I like the peach.
That still has some aspartame in it, right? So if you don't like Diet Coke's aftertaste.
Yeah, you know. Like, the water around here ain't the best.
Especially
it's not bad.
I've noticed that recently. Like, I'm usually super cool with just drinking tap water. But the algae has been blooming lately, and I've noticed my tap water tastes
it's
quite a bit different.
Yeah. Carrollton, like, in the wintertime, Carrollton's water is usually pretty good. In the summertime, it starts getting this sulfurous, muddy taste.
Yeah. Right now, it's real muddy.
And it's awful to drink. Thank God the fridge I've got now has filtered water, but
yeah.
Before that, it was like we would get a Brita, and we would fill up the Brita, and we'd only drink, and God help us if the Brita ran out, because then you have to wait a million years for it to filter out.
The new ones are not bad. Like, Ajax just bought a new Brita, like, 2 weeks ago that we've been using, and it refilled in, like, I don't know, 15 minutes or something.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks that they're really discontinuing it, but I can pretty much guarantee that, like, Big K's not going to discontinue their already things. Like, oh, Coke changed their thing? Well, this is popular enough. Because they don't have, like, a Pepsi Max. They have a Cola O, whatever it is.
I haven't tried the Big K to see how it is, honestly. A lot of times, the cheaper, like, the generic stuff, I don't like the fake sweetener. And I haven't actually run into any generic one that I really like. Usually, if I see a generic soda after I've tried so many of them, I just go, fuck it, I'm drinking water. Which is, you know, good. But when all you've drunk that day is water and you like a change...
You want a little bit of flavor or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how is it compared to Coke Zero Sovereign, the Big K?
It feels... It tastes a bit sweeter. Like, it's actually, like, more on the sweet side. But it's still the zero calorie stuff. It's still, you still use the same sweetener as Coke Zero, just less...
What about compared to Diet Pepsi? Because Diet Pepsi's a little sweeter, but I
hate Diet Pepsi with an unholy passion. Like, I would drink Diet Coke over Diet Pepsi.
Really?
Yes.
See, to me, Diet Pepsi tastes a lot more like an actual Pepsi would. So to me, like, Diet Pepsi and Coke Zero are kind of interchangeable.
Yeah.
But Diet Coke just tastes so...
But as for me, I just drink kind of whatever.
So...
I'm a caffeine addict.
Yeah.
When I lived in the U.S., the first time, I drank sugar soda. So, you know, Coke, everything else like that. I got a feeling that maybe something was a little up, that I might be, there might be something going on there long before I actually got an official diagnosis. But when I moved over to Oz, my ex-husband drank Pepsi Max almost exclusively, and there was something else, but it was also diet. And over there, all the soda and everything is made with sugar. So between living over there, drinking first the regular soda and then the diet, by the time 3 years had gone by the time I moved back to the U.S., Coke and other, between being a diabetic and not drinking it, period, and then when I did drink it, I drank sugar. But when I moved back, I actually didn't like Coke. And I didn't like a lot of sugar soda because I could taste the difference between corn syrup and sugar. So going to diet soda was not so big a deal because I didn't like a lot of the regular soda anymore.
Mm.
And, you know, since then I've pretty much have stopped.
I moved to non-sugared sodas when I was diagnosed as hypoglycemic. And it wasn't really a thing for me. And I dropped like 60 pounds, like, in a really short period of time when I first moved to diet sodas, because holy shit, there's so much sugar in regular soda. Like it's almost kind of horrifying.
Yeah, I noticed I was losing. So there was a time period where I worked at a particular call center, and we went through a stint of like buying Arizona tea. And that's what we... So we go out, we get a bottle of Arizona tea on the way into work and kind of nurse that all day. So 9-hour shift, and it would last most of the shift, just taking a swig now and then.
Yeah.
And I noticed that, one, it's got slightly less sugar than that, and two, I could sip it.
Yeah.
And then I noticed that I started losing weight doing that. And then it was... Eventually went back to soda and all that other stuff. And yada yada, you move forward from there. So yeah, I've noticed a big difference way back in the day when I switched away from sugar to something slightly less. I also discovered that, and this is one way I slowed myself down, that if I drank room temperature soda, I know, and this is kind of the point. I would go through, like if it was a cold can of soda, it would be gone. Just like glug, 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 glug. I'd be done and then I'd get another one.
Yeah.
If it was room temperature soda, I would sip it because, as you said, it's nowhere near as good. So to go through less of it, I discovered just, hey, drink your soda room temp. You won't enjoy it as much and you won't pound it down.
Yeah.
So I would go to work. There was a time when I would just keep a 12-pack of soda under in my desk drawer, and I would go through maybe... I was working 10-hour shifts at that point. I go through two a shift versus soda, 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 soda.
Right.
Like, as soon as I was done, go get another one. It was just something I noticed. And when I drank sugar soda, how to put it? Like, so go out to dinner with Siam. This is long before anybody else was in the picture. And sit down at the...
Before you had a dog.
Or a tiger, before the tiger. Would sit down at a restaurant, place an order, they'd bring out the first drink. And that would be gone, especially in the Texas heat, before the appetizer, the salad, or whatever else came out. And then you'd get another refill. and drink. And I found I was going through like three and a half glasses of soda at a sitting when eating at a restaurant. Once I switched to diet, I noticed that I would go through like maybe one throughout the entire meal, not just... So I noticed that that changed my drinking habits too. So I don't know if that has to do with sugar makes you, I don't know, drink more. But I just found that that was something that a habit that changed with me too.
Also, so soda tends to soda and beer dehydrate. I mean, we pound them back when we're thirsty and they're super refreshing, but they're actually dehydrating you, which makes you want to drink another one.
And that's kind of when I first got an inkling that there was something going on. Drink a soda and be thirsty immediately. Go get another one, drink another one, drink another one. And I would just be keep getting thirsty and thirstier. And then I would start going to the bathroom a lot because it dehydrates you. Plus, you know, when you're diabetic, your body has to get rid of all that sugar that's in your bloodstream that you can't metabolize anymore. And you do it by excreting it. Which is really rough on the kidneys and eventually causes kidney damage. Because glucose crystals are sharp. And it will cause like small damage to like the capillaries and everything. And I noticed that the more soda I drank, I'd start feeling woozy headed and kind of disconnected. And, you know, I'd just go lie down because I wasn't feeling all that great. And all I wanted to do is kind of sit somewhere quiet and get rid of the icky feeling. Eventually it would stabilize because I would stop drinking. You get
your sugar back in space.
Yeah.
So here's something actually good.
Okay.
The Senate panel, the Senate Appropriations Committee has approved a renewal of the Rockbacher-Farr Amendment by a voice vote, which is basically forces the... Department of Justice opposition to basically it protects medical marijuana.
Good.
Oh.
And okay. The they also approved a vote where 24-7 approving the amendment that it permits the VA to recommend marijuana as a treatment in states that allow medical use.
Good.
So fuck you, you piece of shit, Jeff Sessions. So that's good news. So moving on to non-pee related topics. Today's the 30th anniversary of the Rickroll.
Really?
Yep. Rick Astley tweeted today that it has been 30 years since that song's video came out. He's never gonna give you up, and he still hasn't to this day.
I saw his tweet.
That's cool.
I retweeted it. It's like you'd never expect a video to be even a jokey
meme
reference this far out, you know? But that came out. And also the Emoji Movie is a 10 out of 100. So apparently the movie is super ultra mega bad. It has a 0 on Rotten Tomatoes until that one Chicago reviewer guy who is the ultimate contrarian. The one dude that gave Toy Story 3 a negative review and made it a 98 out of 100.
Yeah.
Anton something. He's a real piece of shit. Ignore his name. But it's got a 0. It has a 10 out of 100 on Metacritic right now.
Oh, hang on. I gotta type something. Oh, I was talking shit.
And it's one of those things. Somebody put out a tweet that, there was a Popeye movie and Lauren Faust's Medusa film got canceled for this. I bet Sony is real thrilled. Jenny Taravosky.
What? I think it is. Marketing aficionado thought that this was a good fucking idea.
People love emojis. Kids love emojis. We're going to make everything emoji. We're going to make poo emoji pillows and poo emoji.
I saw poo emoji piggy banks the other day.
Yeah, on clearance at Walmart because nobody bought them because they're like, who the fuck wants pink glittery poo as a bank or shoes or anything? Like, they had Pokemon ones. You can get Pokemon ones. That's great. Or you can get some regular fuzzy ones. But why? Why would anybody want a poo emoji anything?
Except ironically of the, oh, gee, thanks, you got me this.
Yeah, it's super...
Yeah. Why?
It's... You know, these movies... I'm sure it will not even do that well, because, like, I can't think. I mean, obviously, I'm very much a how do you do, fellow kids? I don't know what's hip with them darn tweens and teens, because I'm literally twice their age. But I don't see the Emoji Movie being a big deal. I mean, I've seen the advertising everywhere. I saw a dart bus with a meat poop.
And Poop is voiced by Sir Patrick.
Christ.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
They spent money to pay Sir Patrick to do a poop emoji.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Oh, God, have you seen some of those videos where he smoked pot and he is just laughing his ass off?
No.
Oh, no. He's got some ones that you can tell he's blazed out of his mind because he's giggling. It's great. I mean, he's just gleeful and giggling like Matt.
He's a fun guy.
Yeah, he's on the list of, I'd like to meet you and just have a discussion with you, because you sound like an awesome person.
The videos of him welcoming his rescue pit bull are also amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen that. Now I'm going to have to look.
He and his wife were fostering rescues.
And one of them was this real pretty pit bull, and I think he might have adopted her, I don't know.
I'm not sure.
But he was posting all these photos, and, like, his wife had a photo of him. He was asleep on the couch, and so was the dog, and it was, like, curled up under his arm, like, stretched out on the couch. Because pit bulls are not small dogs.
No.
Yeah. And it was, like, curled up next to him as a little spoon. And it was just this adorable video.
Aww.
I want the pit bull that's been snuggled by Sir Patrick.
There are some people in this world that are just really good people, you know, and I feel that about Sir Patrick and Sir Ian, you know, that they're both just really decent people, and, you know, their
bromance is so cute.
Their bromance is adorable. They're doing the right thing. I mean, talk about being a straight ally. Sir Patrick is amazing.
He's also great for women's.
He speaks so much on domestic abuse mm-hmm. situations. I think we talked about this after I saw him at a con. Saverin and I went to see him at Dallas Comic Con years ago. And, you know, someone was one of the Q&As, someone was, like, thanking him or asking him for the work he was doing in that area. And he talked a bit about it. And, like, so his father was abusive to his mother. And the thing he also pointed out, that the reasons his father was abusive was that he did not get the psychological treatment that he should have gotten after being in the war. And so he's also working on stuff to make sure that men get, like proper treatment and mental health and stuff like that, because that's a big component of this kind of thing. And also, you know, supporting, like, battered women's shelters and things like that. And that's one of those using your powers for good kind of thing, because, I mean, he has a huge fan base from playing so many iconic characters, you know, and his voice carries weight, and he's very respected, and he's using that voice to get across some really good messages.
Yeah. I love when stars do stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, actually, there was a thing I saw today. Dolly Parton has a thing where she sends books to kids all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And she has so far, because her dad never learned to read, and she was like, yo, literacy is a big deal for me.
Yeah.
She has sent 92 million books to kids around the world.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Over the course of however long she's been doing this. And I think that's really awesome.
She also did a huge amount of things for when there were the wildfires out in Tennessee, out mm-hmm. around the Dollywood area.
Yeah.
She did a huge amount for people living out there
mm-hmm.
to try and get everything. And not just, you know, like getting the park up, but the workers and just the area in general. Yeah. So she's really
like Stephen King in that way. Like, she, you know, takes care of the people in the area where, you know, she's been operating and, you know, been a part of the community.
And Dollywood and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm also the only person that gives a shit about Pokemon Go here.
I used to. I really should get back into it, but yeah.
So I think we may have mentioned last week, but this week, so their Pokemon Go Fest was a massive fuck up.
I saw people tweeting about that because the cell area was over swamped with data.
Basically, they didn't which is have lack of planning powers. On
Niantic's part.
Yeah. Well, you know how, like, when there's a festival in Addison, there's always multiple pop-up cell towers?
Yep, assists.
Oh, I didn't know they did that, but that's really good. Oh, yeah,
they deploy them at least 2-3 out there because they have so many people coming into Addison Circle that... Mm-hmm.
This is for shit like Taste of Addison.
Taste of Addison or
Boomtown.
Boomtown, yep.
Yeah, or Oktoberfest or anything like that. They have the little pop-up cell towers, and they stick them around the park so that people can have cell service.
I didn't even know that was a thing. That's really neat.
Yeah. And, like, only Sprint worked because Verizon and AT&T are... See, Niantic blamed them, and AT&T and Verizon, like, you didn't ask us.
Yeah.
So it seems like that these guys didn't know what the fuck they were doing. So, basically, the end result for anybody that didn't pay the money to go to Chicago and pay the $20 to get in and whatever else... basically, they just like, all right, everybody gets maximum bonuses for 3 days. And so that's cool. So you got double transfer candy, double XP, triple rate on eggs. It was actually really, really nice. And then people are like, yo, 3 days isn't long enough. And the ante goes, okay, we're extending it to a week. Everybody gets these bonuses until like 8 p.m. today.
I'm glad that they made... proper moves to take care of their users and the people that attended and everything. But a statement you made a couple minutes ago, but Niantic didn't know what the fuck they were doing. That's kind of like universal, isn't it? Like Niantic seems to not know what the fuck they're doing in a general sense with this game.
Yeah. Like the fact that I'm still playing is kind of silly. I like it as a little fitness app. Like, I walk with the dog. I walk my dog, and I walk my Pokemon eggs. And I've got a good selection of stuff. And actually, I did really well this last little week. I actually leveled twice from level 27 to 29, which is
cool.
Like 500,000 XP. Because I had been stockpiling shit knowing that this event was going to happen. And so I knew how to get a bunch of XP pretty quick. But...
Got something. Like, he's a gym master now or something?
I'm sure.
Well, he posted, like, a screen cap of it. It was, like, a big, glowy, important-looking thing. So I guess that's... that's a big step.
Yeah. Well, he's put in a lot more money and a lot more time than I have in the game, but...
Yeah, he seems to really enjoy it, so that's cool.
It's fun. It gets you out there, and... I went out there today after we had lunch buzz. I went out to Addison Circle and walked around, because there's a bunch of Pokestops, and right now they're doing this massive... push on like extra spawn rates, so like you have all these Pokemon spawning at a time. There's this nice little cluster of two gyms and three stops right near the big blue sculpture there that when you go into like the center of it, there's probably about a dozen Pokemon just fucking around there that you can kind of take your pick of.
Is this up on Addison Circle?
Yeah.
I saw a friend tweeting something the other day about like she was driving and there was like a crowd of like 40 people all chasing after like one particular Pokemon.
Well, they introduced the legendaries.
Right. So
first legendary Articuno. And unfortunately, I'm probably not going to get one before the event ends because you have to have a group of at least 15, 20 people minimum to take a crack at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ajax was saying that too.
And like they have a super low catch rate, so good fucking luck getting one.
Right.
So I'm just kind of like, if I somehow was in a spot and there was a big group of people and the raid popped, I would participate.
Apparently there was a legendary in downtown Dallas.
There was
this week.
There was two I could see from Addison Circle today, but they were both like one of them is a gym at the Intercontinental now. They converted one of the Pokestops to a gym at the Intercontinental. And one was like the post office up off of Addison Road. On the east side of the airport there.
I just had this realization. It's like, if Fiesta downtown next year, the Pokemon hunting's going to be kind of lit, right?
Yeah, if the game's still going, I'm sure it will be. And they probably have Gen 3 by that time, and you can go into downtown. There's some really good stops.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Kyo was complaining he could see, like, multiple raids going on from the office.
From work, yeah.
And he's like, fuck! like, I can't go do it. Shit. But I had a really good time with it. Like, it's fun when they do these little events. You get Pokemon you don't normally see. And
if I were him, I would have just taken an extended smoke break. Take the train a stop or two if you need to. Yeah. And go and do it.
Go on lunch.
Yeah.
Take a lunch.
I'm taking a long lunch.
But Niantic at least made good for their users in that they extended the bonuses. They made it so that people could catch their... My phone's blooping at me. They made it so that everybody got the good bonuses for a week.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good. But I do know a guy who flew out to Chicago and... I haven't talked to him, but he literally took vacation time to go to Chicago for GoFest, and it didn't quite go that well.
Oh.
I mean, they are saying that everybody's getting their money refunded, their $20 entry, and everybody's getting $100 in Pokecoins, which actually is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So those people that... But they still... They flew to fucking Chicago and spent money at hotels and spent money in the town. They made the vacation to make this big deal that they just, like...
They yeah. Up.
It also killed all the cell service for everybody who lived in the area, too.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know... Like, they have mishandled everything so poorly, and the fact that they're still making money is just one of those, like, just by the weight of the IP alone.
Mm-hmm.
And a wild Sarah appears to steal some hookah.
Do you Pokemon Go, Sarah? No.
It's a cute popper. We'll pet the popper.
Does anyone in your household do?
We used to. Not so much anymore.
Yeah.
Partially because, like, where I worked, it was a dead zone. There wasn't anything around.
What about your new place? Is it?
Haven't tried. I mean, I could I should probably check that out. But, no, in that, at least where in my old job, there wasn't jack or shit anywhere around. I mean, I could go up to, I tried going up to Addison Circle at lunch there. I mean, I got some. But that was, like, last summer. And it was hot.
Yeah, trying to play it in Texas is a bit of a risk, because it is real hot.
So something that's happened since the last time we recorded is Comic-Con occurred. And all the Comic-Con trailers dropped.
Oh, shit, yeah.
For all the new stuff. So, like, the new Thor Ragnarok trailer.
Fuck yeah.
I avoided it because I don't want to spoiler any more of it. You've already sold me.
I love
right? This, I love you the got my ticket. Huh?
I love the everything about the look of that film.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Just...
You got Heimdall, you got all this other stuff, you got the Valkyrie chick.
Got Bruce Banner.
Yep.
I love that Mark Ruffalo's in it. Oh, and the Hulk's voice is Lou Ferrigno, the guy that played Hulk in the 70s series, which is super cool. Like, he's done all the grunts and stuff like that, but I don't want to say more because she hasn't seen the trailer.
It looks super good. JLA looks, or Justice League looks pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of reframing it more as they focus on Wonder Woman, at least in the advertising.
Right.
Because at the current time, apparently in the DCU, Superman's dead, or presumed dead.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's like, yeah, Wonder Woman's in charge. Because that movie did really well and made us a lot of money, so, yeah.
Let's market it on the strength of Wonder Woman. I mean, they'd be dumb not to.
Yeah, because they've got Cyborg, Aquaman, Flash...
Batman.
But no Green Lantern, and no Superman right now.
They'd probably focus on Batman if there was a current Batman series of movies going. If there were at all, because Batman, as played by Ben Affleck, has only been in Batman versus Superman. He hasn't had a standalone Batman film.
Yeah.
So, like, if Batman was a thing individually, then they'd probably... Then he would be a bigger part of it. But it's... And like, DC stuff, you know, I'll skip it. I might catch it on Netflix or whatever later on. I've never really been... Like, DC's characters have never really grabbed me, I guess. I have, like, a passing sort of liking of Batman. But the trailer does look good, though. And they're doing the... ensemble cast kind of thing, and trying to, like, recreate some of that Avengers magic, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, if they just draw upon like what they had going in like the cartoons, mm-hmm. that'd be cool. Mm-hmm. Because DC has a really good long pedigree of good animated stuff, but they just
have a lot of iconic characters to draw from. But yeah, the films have not done well until Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know what I really liked? I liked the Ryan Reynolds added Gal Gadot. Is that how you pronounce her name?
Gal Gadot.
Gil or Jill?
I'm not sure.
Okay, the actress that plays Wonder Woman. And he added her, you know, some complimentary tweet because Wonder Woman surpassed Deadpool in its total box office take. And, nice. You know, Ryan Reynolds is a cool dude, and, you know, that was cool that he did that. I mean, especially considering, like, I mean, from a totally competing thing, because he's because that's Marvel character. So that was really cool.
Yeah, I didn't pay a ton of attention. Like, Thor Ragnarok was the biggest trailer that I saw that was like, oh, fucking sweet.
Yeah,
but fucking, I was already sold on the first trailer.
I was sold on the first trailer, and this was just like, I don't think it repeated anything from the first trailer. It was just more awesome shit, and more off the hook, and I'm just like, oh, I'm so looking forward to this movie. I was talking to friends, or I mentioned on Twitter, like, I hadn't even seen a trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming. I'm sure it's a good movie. I would probably enjoy it if I watch it. I have no interest in going out to see it. That's totally a Netflix or just buy it on iTunes thing for me.
Yeah.
But like, I'm really stoked, unbelievably stoked for Thor Ragnarok.
Mm.
I'm also quite excited to see Black Panther.
Oh,
The trailers for Black Panther that have been really good. Cool. Yeah, that looks cool as shit. Oh, and I didn't know, because I didn't recognize her, because she looks very different, and I don't remember her real name, but the actress who plays Michonne in The Walking Dead is like one of Black Panther's like royal court or something like that, and she looks fucking badass.
Yeah, like I did see the trailer for that, and it looks really fucking cool, and I didn't have a lot of context because I had not seen Civil War until last weekend.
Oh, where, no shit.
Basically, Black Panther shows up, and a couple of the characters they're going to be in Black Panther are in Civil War.
Right,
we have the Wakanda delegation, where T'Challa gets the ring and becomes the king.
The guy that was stealing the vibranium is in Civil War. He's going to be in Black Panther.
Yeah, and so I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Civil War in general is just a really good movie. I liked it a lot.
It's so long.
Yeah.
it was pretty good, and I think they did a better job of explaining that they had to recontextualize the entirety of the movie, because the original Civil War thing, this is comic nerd time,
sure,
was the whole Civil War thing was started, the Mutant Registration Act, because a mutant fucked up and blew up a school. Speedball fucked up, blew up a school, and killed a bunch of kids.
And then he became, I think, Penance because of that.
Mm. And he was the edgiest character ever.
Penance was, yeah.
Yeah.
I love Speedball as a character. He was like one of the original ones that I started reading New Warriors because of.
Wow, that's, I don't know this character at all.
I guess he wasn't in X-Men?
Because I read the X-Men comics.
So. Well, he was a younger mutant character, and basically the genesis of the, like, what became, like, in the movie, the Sokovia Accords, was basically the Mutant Registration Act. But because because Marvel doesn't have the X-Men rights right now, there could be no real reference to mutants.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing where it kind of weakens Captain America's position, because the Sokovia Accords really only affected the Avengers
and
the other super-powered individuals that were limited to the MCU, versus all of mutant kind plus all the superheroes like the Avengers.
Because in the original comic series, he equated it to becoming basically Jews. You know, he drew back to his original World War II.
Magneto being a big part of that. storyline, and because with the Jewish World War II background.
Yeah, he was kind of like, yo, I've seen this happen already. It doesn't end well.
Yeah, and which is so it's a really good comic story because of that.
But because, like, in the Marvel movies, they don't have the mutant aspect, so it just was much more narrow.
Yeah.
So they had to, like, change his objections a little bit. I did like the line when, you know, you must plant yourself like a tree next to the river of truth and tell the world no, you move. That's a line that Captain America says during that they repurposed to, like, during, like, one of the hearings at the beginning of the film. But Tony's...
No, it was during the funeral. And that was basically part of the eulogy. And that was being read to him. Wasn't it part of the eulogy that her niece was when his love died?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the niece was
Agent reading. Carter.
Yeah.
Peggy Carter.
And the niece was reading the eulogy, and that's where the no, you move. Yeah, it came that, from that the was, eulogy.
And he had said that in the comics in response to the whole thing. So that was a good use of that line because it's a very iconic, very Captain America, I am moral character moment.
See, okay, so were you, but there was this whole thing in the marketing lead up to it and stuff like that. So were you Team Cap or Team Tony?
Well,
Team Torn in Half. It's like, no.
Like, watching the movie, I definitely empathized a lot more with Tony Stark.
Well, in the movie, in Civil War the movie, it was definitely more on Tony's side because he had seen the devastation that his superheroics has caused.
Mm-hmm.
And in the movie, the scope was narrower.
Yeah.
But in the comics, Cap was more in the right because it was a much broader, affected literally every single person in the country that had mutant abilities, even the shitty ones.
So Tony had me right at the end.
The whole friend line?
I'm a mama's boy. You know, I was very close to my mom. And when Tony goes, sorry, Cap, he killed my mom, and then just goes into full attack mode, I was like, fuck yes.
And, like, Bucky didn't have anything to do with the original story. Like, they had to repurpose Winter... They had to, like, wedge Winter Soldier into the storyline. It doesn't follow the comic books at all, because, of course, it doesn't.
Right.
But it was the like,
MCU is its own continuity.
It's its own thing, yeah.
Yeah, I really liked... Baron Zemo's, Zemo, his whole reason for, you know, basically destroying the Avengers is because you basically, you superpowered fucks, you've destroyed so much around you, you know, I really like when you went into the bunker and he'd already killed them. It's like, oh, we're not going to have a big powerful team fight because they're already dead, because no, he hates superpowered fucks.
Yeah, he was not, like, trying to get his own team. He was trying to stop them. Because, yeah, I mean, Bucky Barnes, as a character, did a lot of bad shit. And Cap's blind loyalty to him, even if his buddy, like, caused a shitload more destruction than...
Really, Bucky probably should have been locked up and gotten some psychoanalysts, you know...
He needs someone to deprogram him. Yeah.
Yeah, he really needed to. But I got the feeling that... Captain America didn't trust them to do good by him.
Yeah.
And so, it is one of those things, like, in the movie, I can see definitely Tony's point of view.
Yeah.
I can see both. It's also kind of like, Cap, he killed my mom. It's like, but he was fucking brainwashed. It's not like he had a choice.
That doesn't matter when someone kills your parents, though.
Yeah. Like, it's...
I also just really like Tony as a character. I also really like Robert Downey Jr.
Did you see Spider-Man yet?
No.
Oh, he's
I literally
good.
Just said that.
I know. I'm sorry. He's really good. His bit parts of Spider-Man are really good.
Mm-hmm.
He is very Tony Stark.
I might see Spider-Man at some point just for Tony Stark more than anything.
It's a really good movie. Surprisingly, really good movie. Mm-hmm. Very, for lack of a better term, real. Yeah. I mean, with the Toby, was it Toby Maguire? Or, you know,
Toby Maguire was the first one. Yeah.
That one, but this, the kid that they've got for the current Spider-Man just the whole tone of everything felt a lot more real than a lot of fucking teen movies do.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it manages to catch a lot of the vibe, a lot of the realism. And the fucking bad guy in there is great. Michael Keaton is the bad guy. Michael fucking Keaton plays the Vulture. Oh. I did not realize that until I walked in. And it's like, wait a minute. That's Michael fucking Keaton.
Oh, neat.
And it's like, wow. And he's really good. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen him in anything anytime recently. And then they... It's like, he's still doing acting? And he's still fucking awesome?
He was in a movie that was Oscar nominated. And I think he might have been nominated too. Called Birdman. It came out a couple years ago. And it was basically about a guy that had played a comic superhero back in the day, and now he was older and kind of out of work and like trying to recapture that. I haven't seen it, so I'm giving
like, I need a, to a, watch that. I did not realize he was in that either.
Yeah, he's the main character, and like, and it's sort of, and that's another very kind of true role, because I mean, he was the first film, but okay, there was a Batman movie with Adam West, but like, he was known as Batman, like, for those two movies back in the day, right? In the late 80s,
early 90s. He was still one of my favorite Bruce Waynes.
Yeah. So it was really cool that he was playing this part that was, like, sort of Adam West, sort of Michael Keaton. And I think that's gotten noticed again. And that's probably why he was in this Marvel movie.
He was good. Like, everything else was good, but he's a great villain, and he was a very believable villain, like,
mm-hmm.
very good motivation. He was as good a villain, I feel, as the one that they set up for Civil War. Very down-to-earth, like, believable motivations, not just quite crazy whack job that wants to rule
those, up. Those are the best villains.
Yeah, it's like, wow, I actually feel for you, and I kind of understand, because they set up the whole thing where he goes bad really well.
Yeah.
Really well.
I don't. That's not going to be the case with Ragnarok, because that's...
I mean, no.
That's going to be the you know, Hera, and, or Hela. Is it Hera or Hela?
Hell. Just Hell. No.
No, she has an A in the movie, I think.
Hmm.
I thought. Does she?
I don't know.
Anyway, God of Death. So that's going to be different. But, you know, like I said, I will catch Homecoming at some point. But I'm really stoked for Black Panther and Ragnarok. And there was also a trailer for Star Trek Discovery. Longer look at that.
That would look like a war film, almost.
It's going to be a bit...
It was very action-packed.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit more conflict-y than, like, the original series. Because you're at a point where, like, there's a lot more tension with the Klingon Empire. I mean, there was definitely, you know, they were definitely not friends during the original Star Trek run. During
they weren't terribly friendly during Next Generation either.
No, they were allies, but there's clearly, like, you know, there's some friction depending on who's in the leadership at the time. But this is before all that, before there was any kind of peace accord and stuff like that. Because the whole peace accord happened in Star Trek VI, you know, towards the end of the original series characters arc. But
I think it looks cool. I think it really sucks, though, that it's on the CBS All Access, because...
I know. I haven't decided yet whether I'll actually fucking pony up the monthly amount to watch it, or whether I'll just wait till it's run and buy it on iTunes. Because even if they don't put it on iTunes right away, I'm sure it'll drop it on iTunes to buy after it's done airing.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm excited to see a new Star Trek show.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. It's like Doctor Who, I won't wait. You know, I'll just buy it on iTunes. But Doctor Who has the advantage of being available on iTunes, like, immediately, you know,
also
the day after.
The Christmas special looks fucking cool.
Oh, yes.
They're doing a fucking...
No spoilers.
No spoilers.
Just in case people haven't seen Series 10 yet. And
okay,
seen, you
but
know,
it looks
the
fucking
end of
cool.
Stuff. But, yeah, the Christmas special, you know, if you've seen any promo images for it, you've already been spoiled, but it does look really good.
They found that dude's body double. Like, it, I saw that guy's promo and, like, holy shit, are they really doing this? Oh, they really are!
Yeah, we're talking about the Doctor Who Christmas special now.
Which body double did they find?
We don't want to spoil it because okay. It's revealed at the very end of the last episode of season 10. And if not everyone is caught up on series 10 of Doctor Who yet, I don't want to spoil it
for anybody. No, no, I'm not.
But they've put out trailers, and they've done Comic-Con, and they've put out promo images, and the Christmas special is going to be really good. And there's, like, a couple of characters returning that we thought wouldn't be, and I'm like...
So. Yeah, it looks really... Like, I've seen a couple of the trailers for previous Christmas specials, and I'm kind of like, eh, whatever, but this one makes me go, no way, I've got to see this.
See, usually, so the idea of a Christmas special is that those are supposed to be the more fun, less serious episodes because it's a Christmas special. It's supposed to be fun. But this Christmas special is like, okay, it's a swan song of the 12th Doctor, and they're doing some really,
In the 13th Doctor?
Swan song is the end of a rondo.
Right. I'm mixing it up.
Yeah, Capaldi is the 12th Doctor. And they're doing some really neat stuff with it. So it's like, oh, I can't like. So I saw this fun clip. So Kevin Smith was a big part of Comic-Con. Uh-huh. He was doing a lot of interviews and a lot of press.
On the IMD boat.
And one of the clips that I saw was he was interviewing Stephen Moffat and Peter Capaldi on the IMD boat. And, you know, Smith was like, I'm not a big Doctor Who fan, but your role that I'm most familiar with is Malcolm Tucker from In the Thick of It. And he's like, so now that you've left the show, are you going to get to swear again? And Capaldi's like, wow, I haven't cursed in like 4 years. Can I do it now? And Steven's like, no, because we've still got the Christmas special to go. He's like, oh, and Kevin Smith's like, let the man swear. And Stephen Moffat says, as soon as Jody is on the screen, then you can swear. So yeah, looking forward to looking forward to, but frustrated by Star Trek Discovery's method of being aired.
Yeah.
So when you'd stepped out of the room, I was saying to Sarah, and I haven't decided whether I'm gonna pay for CBS All Access or whether I'm just going to try to wait out the whole season and then get it on iTunes. Because I'm really excited to see a new Star Trek show, but I'm like, Christ. I mean, Tyrion pays for Prime, pay for Netflix, and Ajax pays for Hulu, and I'm like, if your shit is not on one of those three huge platforms, then fuck you.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like it is with anime, right? Mm-hmm.
Right, if it's not on Crunchyroll, then Netflix. Why the fuck am I going to pay $5 extra for the Amazon thing?
So, actually, this moves into another thing I made notes for. This anime season has been blessed. There's a lot of pretty good shows going on this season. Mm-hmm. And a couple that are just kind of like, what the fuck? So, last season I think we were only watching like 3 shows total, whereas this season we have 11.
And, wow. So you're actually consistently watching 11 animes right now?
We're not consistently. Like, we're kind of staggering at some because, like, all right, we've got 4 episodes of this one, let's catch up on this one, and, like, having them little binges because there's so many. But, so right now, I'm just going to, like, partial list. So there's one called Gamers, which is a slice of life about a gaming club, a video gaming club at a high school.
Is it Gamers with a Z?
No, it's just all caps with exclamation points. Okay. But what's interesting is they have a working relationship with, like, Arc System Works. So when there's fighting game footage in the background, it's actually fighting game footage from the games. And when they show the game room, they have this big collection of PC titles, which are lightly obscured, but you can totally tell what they are. So it's like, oh, that's the box for Fallout and Fallout 2, or that's the box for, various other CRPGs. Mm-hmm. And they've got, this console, this console, this console. How interesting. But it's a cute enough slice of life. Don't know where it's going, but it's a slice of life, so whatever. There's one called Token Rendezvous, which is time travel with hot boys who are also magical swords, which is pretty cool, and it's set during the
So they have sword sonas?
Yes. And they're all pretty boys. It's based on a mobile game, of course, but it's pretty action-packed, and basically the main characters are standing in for a team of people that were important in this particular era of Japan to basically... They're pro allowing the expansion to open world, allowing Dutch... basically letting in immigrants and letting people in Western garb and whatever, versus the people who want to change history, as well as the local factions who want to slaughter all the Westerners and kick everybody out, make it, you know, exclusionary and xenophobic. There's one called Tsurudere Children, which is, you know how in romance animes, well, you probably don't, fuzz, but it's, all it is like, the characters, they, ships passing in the night, and they all, like, they want to confess, but they can't speak, and, oh, no, this whole anime, the first three episodes is all the characters basically being horny for each other and admitting it.
Nice.
And so...
It's a lot less frustrating.
It is a lot less frustrating, and it's all these characters having these really hilarious cross-talk moments, and then sometimes they're just like, yo, let's fucking... They're kind of like, yo, let's date. Okay, cool. And there's one where, you know, it's like, oh, this boy is completely clueless, and this girl super loves him. And then she finally fucking says it, and he's like, oh, you're not joking. Oh, cool, I like you too. And so it gets around the frustrating trope of the confession happening on episode 12 or episode 25. Very, very end. It's like, no, this is happening straight up front, and it's a comedy, and we're just going to go with it. So it's teenagers being horny for each other in high school. So that's cool. And new game, season 2 is coming out. That was really good. It's slice of life, cute girls doing cute things at a game studio. Character drama, lots of lesbians. Like, the person that...
Sounds good.
Yeah, the woman that runs it is a big old lesbian, and she picked her staff based upon their technical skills and if they're cute enough. She's not...
Oh, you mean on the show, right?
On the show, in real life.
You said the girl that's running it. I thought you meant the actual person in charge of making the anime hired the animators based on if they were cute lesbians.
No.
But that's the concept of the show. Yeah, gotcha.
She picked a lot of her employees. It's an all-women office.
Mm-hmm.
And basically she picked them based on their technical merit, also in if they're cute.
Double X Anime Studio.
Yeah. It's called the Eagle Jump is the studio, and they make fantasy RPGs and whatever. It was a very cute show last season, and it continues to be cute. Though there's one that I thought would be really good that has turned out to have lots of weird red flags, and that's A Centaur's Life.
That was, we watched that before
Civil War last weekend.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that before, and then we got a Tumblr, at response to you.
Yeah, so it has some weird social commentary stuff that is very culturally based. Like, it's very Japanese culture based versus, like, what we think here in the West. And actually, we can read that real quick because we didn't have a lot of questions this week. Basically, we're loading. About A Centaur's Life's seemingly negative comments towards equity, you see it through the eyes of a white American. It's all black people, gay people, and Muslims with you lot. Can we raise an eyebrow? But looking at it from an Eastern perspective, it makes sense. Japanese society does its best to squash out any differences to make people unique and special, until everyone is basically a robot and that has one purpose in life, to work until you die. Everyone being treated the exact same can be a curse in that way. So I'm like, okay, sure.
That kind of sounds like hell.
Yeah. It sucks. Japanese work culture sucks, especially compared to the West. And there's been multiple studies basically saying that their work culture produces nothing of any significant higher quality than the West. It's just that their culture, working long in hours because it's all competing with each other to see who's going to get a promotion. So like they're doing like 80-hour weeks in the office for no extra pay, killing themselves, drinking. And it doesn't really do much for them. And they're... Actually, there was an article I read recently where they're trying to basically slow that the fuck down. be like, okay, you know, you guys actually do need to take vacations.
Whoa,
take
time slow off. Your roll, Japan.
Yeah. Well, it's also preventing people from, young people from having relationships and getting married and having children, because they're one of the few countries in the world that's having a negative population growth. So, that sucks for them. But there was another thing in, like, episode 3 where, so, Japan has a very different conception about kissing. Kissing is a Western import. Because I had to ask James about this because it was just really out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
Where a kiss on the cheek, it depends on, like, the relationship and how different people view it in Japan. Kissing is a very Western thing and very attached to sexuality. It's not a sign of affection between family or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they had this conversation in the park where it's the three little kids and the, like, the centaur's little centaur niece, and they're talking about kissing, and they're like, oh, well, girls don't kiss girls. Then insert canon lesbian couple comes in, and like, yeah, they can. Really? Yeah, I'll show you. The characters, like, kiss right in front of them, and everyone's like,
scandalized.
And the other two characters, and then the main, those two characters kind of fuck off. And then at the end, though, the centaur kisses her niece goodbye, and the mom makes this really weird comment. It's like, oh, if only you were a boy, Hime, because I don't think I can give her to a lowly Yuri lover. What? We both paused it at that point, and we're like, what? It'd be okay if you were a guy, centaur main character girl, but I don't know about this lesbian pedo thing. Maybe if you were just a dude.
Wow.
Yeah, so, because she kissed her goodbye. She, like, she was carrying her to the car, laid her down in the sin car, and kissed her on the cheek, and...
Is this, like, a third episode other than what we watched?
It was a third episode, yeah. And we were just like, what the fuck? What the fuck? This is so weird. And, like, we stopped and had this conversation. It's like, is Japan really fucking weird about kissing? And it's like, yeah, but that's really fucking weird. Beyond being weird about kissing.
Right. It is it like pointed out in the show that that character's being kind of a shit?
Or? No. It's just, she wasn't, I don't think she was being rude or cruel or anything. It was just this kind of offhanded thing about the main centaur character, Hime, kissing her niece goodbye. And how her aunt took it really weird. Like, dear Anon on Tumblr, please tell me that Japan's really not that weird about kissing. I'll be wrong about that, but it seemed really out of the fucking blue. Like, I screen capped it and posted it to Tumblr, and it was like, what the fuck? And nobody bothered to enlighten me. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
Well, you don't go on Tumblr to learn things, Savrin. You go on there to argue
and
pitch a fit about everything.
Yep. Like, Rule 63 about the Dream Daddy characters being Dream Mommies. DILFs instead of DILFs. No, MILFs instead of DILFs.
DILFs? Daddy I'd like to fuck?
Yeah. Daddy I'd like to fuck. Mom I'd like to fuck.
Dad, daddy, daddier.
Daddiest.
Daddiest, sorry.
We totally need to play that fuzz.
Okay.
It seems really cute. I've seen some of it being played, and it would be something I think you'd probably get a kick out of.
Okay.
Just because of the dad puns.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I probably would get a kick out of that.
And then someone asked us via Tumblr if I'd wear a pompadour wig on a stream. I'm like, yeah, sure, maybe if it was new, not pre-worn.
Yeah, not some old lice-filled fucking thing from the 70s. Going. Get some what?
Jiggle physics. But, yeah, the anime season, man. What can you do? So much good stuff.
I'm not watching much right now. Like, I'll throw on an episode of Elementary while I'm eating dinner or something like that. Of course, I'm back in season 1. Like, this is kind of funny, actually. So, I discovered Elementary is on Hulu.
I love Elementary, and especially earlier seasons.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, okay, you know, I'll watch an episode. I'll give it a shot, because I've never seen it before, but I've heard about it. And Johnny Lee Miller's in it. And I had just watched Trainspotting 2. He plays Sick Boy in the Trainspotting movies. I was like, okay, well, you know, he's in it. I love Lucy Liu. So
she's a great Watson, and she takes none of his shit.
Yeah, yeah. I really like this incarnation of Watson. She's really good.
She takes none of his shit, and it's just like, I am so done with your bullshit.
So what's funny is I started watching it, and Tyrion and Ajax will both do this thing where they're like, I don't know if they're just like entranced by the bright flashing pictures or whatever, but if I'm sitting in the living room watching something and they walk behind me, they just, and the TV's on, they just stop and watch the TV. And it's like they're sort of entranced by whatever it is. And sometimes it sucks them in. And so since I've been watching Elementary very slowly, I'm only like 2/3 of the way through season one. But Tyrion's watched like mid through season two, and Ajax just binged, I think, the whole damn thing last weekend.
Goddamn.
It's just kind of, it's like 5 seasons worth. It's just kind of funny that this was a thing I just started watching to see if it was any good, and it is, and I'm enjoying it. And, you know, the other two people in my house are just, oh, well, now we're going to binge this because we randomly...
We're going to get caught up on this. Feel free to join.
Mm-hmm. So that's all I'm really watching lately. Got more reading to do.
But yeah, I really only watch... I sit down and watch anime like once a week, and that's about it.
Yeah.
I don't do a lot of other TV watching. Just be like, all right, we're going to binge watch the anime, and then don't. I did get Splatoon 2, and I did get the copy of Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild that was very graciously donated by one of our listeners, so thank you very much for that.
Very cool.
Splatoon 2 was a lot of fun. The fact that the graphics that game has comes out of that tiny little box is astounding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and yeah, it's a little underpowered relative to what it could be, but what it does do is really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really cool, and... I'm quite enjoying having it.
I'll have to come over sometime and you'll have to show me the Nintendo Switch. Because, like, yeah, I'm not a video gamer, but, like, I'm actually kind of interested in the hardware.
Yeah.
And how it works.
It, like, I only have some weird technical stuff with, like...
The Bluetooth,
because one of the things I say is, like, hey, don't have it next to the TV and don't have it next to wireless network equipment. And I've got no less than, like... a switch and 2 access points directly behind my computer.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, so if I take it out of the room, sync them remotely, and then put them back in the room and put the system block on the dock, it works just fine. But they don't want to sync if they're anywhere near my computer monitor setup. So bizarre. But I think that's pretty much about all I've got.
It hasn't been a very busy week for me. It's been work, home, work, home, work, home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. Other than that, it's WoW shit, which unless you're head deep into the rating scene, you're not going to get.
Yeah. So that's interesting to me. Like, there's WoW, and I'm just like, I'm very, I guess, single-focused with video games, where I'm just like, oh, it's a video game, and it's all that occurs to me. But apparently there's whole different ways to play WoW.
Uh-huh.
Like, you can, like, the raid thing is apparently a big thing for certain types of people. And then there's other people that are just not really doing that at all, and they just kind of do their own thing or whatever.
Well, like, I'm a filthy casual. I don't raid. I do the LFR.
Mm-hmm.
I go and raid for pretty dresses for my characters. I go hit the old stuff up. Because power creep is such, Jean goes smash pretty much everything from everything back. No problem, because the power creep has gotten just crazy relative to prior expansions. And for me, like, I do LFR as they come out, and they're super stretching out the LFR, so I'm actually unsubscribed right now. And I've just been paying for my sub with gold for the past several months.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I'm, like, playing some Warframe, playing Splatoon, playing Zelda. Mm-hmm. But WoW is just like, yo, I have played that game for so long, and until the next major patch comes out, I can just binge it. I mean, I want to see fucking Argus in the Sky. That looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not gonna drop 150,000 gold or whatever to play when I'm not, when there's other shit I can be playing.
Is that how much tokens are going for? About 150k?
I think it was like 130 last I looked, but it fluctuates. They spiked super hard when Destiny 2 pre-orders came out.
Mm-hmm.
Converting the tokens to Battle.net credit, but it's super unlikely that I'm going to play Destiny 2.
Because
the first one didn't seem very great, and the second one's not much faster. It's a very slow, methodical kind of shooter game, and I'm like, eh, I'm going to play some Warframe, I'm going to play other things, because it's like $70.
I might turn in some gold and get the new Necromancer or for Diablo.
I've got like $35 of Battle.net credit because I just had a bunch of gold and was like, I'm going to do that. But making gold in the expansion, if you're playing casually, is super easy.
I've noticed that.
Like, and when you have 7 or 8 dudes at 110, I had a bunch of alts, you can just start sending them out on the gold missions all the time.
That's what I'm down to.
Yeah, because it's just like, all right, well, you're going to go guarantee me, like, 2,500 gold. Go for it. There's another 3,000 here, 2,000 there, and you have it across multiple characters. What's also nice is if when you're unsubbed and you go to pay for resub via gold, it takes it from equal amounts from all your characters. You know, kind of, like, pool it all, send it all to a bank vault, and be like, all right, buy my token, bitch.
Yep.
So.
I mean, I play, at this point, I mean, I'm kind of jonesing for a break on WoW, but the problem is that the people I play with, you know, between being, well, Sarah's the guild leader, so it's hard for him to unsub. I'm one of the main tanks and his other half, so it's hard for me to unsub. What we've been doing is usually we get through whatever patches, raid content is, and then we have a couple months break. Because, you know.
Yeah, because once the Argus patch comes out, the next raid tier is not going to be available for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, like, the next X pack is totally going to be Old Gods focused with Kul'Tiras. Because I saw a thing on MMO Champion, it's like, Vindicated Doomsayer has showed up in Dalaran. It's the Doomsayers that kind of appeared before Cataclysm. Same cultist robes and shit. So it's like, hey, remember the Twilight Hammer? We're still here, and we're still gonna be like, yo, old gods, eat our shit. So we're probably gonna be dealing with N'Zoth, or yes, N'Zoth, I think.
I need to read the compendiums, the hardcovers that they've been putting out once a year.
Chronicle Volume 1, and there's Chronicle Volume 2 that's out, and then Chronicle 3 is coming, which is going to cover the First War, I think, and everything up to WoW.
Yeah, I need to. I've read part of Chronicle 1, I need to sit down and read the rest. Chronicle 2, I got for Sarah for his birthday. I got him the last one for his birthday as well, from the prior year, so. So, there's a lot of lore in there, and it's really interesting.
This is the canonical shit. This is the facts. This is what it is now, because they've had to retcon and retcon and retcon and fix, and they're basically making everything fit WoW's canon at this point, and that's fine. They want to have a unified, okay, so actually this happened, and that's why blah can be blah, and, you know, okay, well, this is, you know, this is the history of the Troll Empire and why there's trolls literally fucking everywhere.
It's like they started to really dial it in at WoW and went, you know, we could publish a book with this stuff. And they were like, that's a good idea.
Yeah, we can explain all this bullshit. And how, like, every race on Azeroth is either Titan created or descended from trolls. And how orcs are descended from the Ogeron on Draenor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're literally like a degenerated species similar to, well, dwarves from Earthen, or trogs from dwarves.
And that elves came from trolls.
Yep. It was like trolls, night elves, then blood elves.
Mm-hmm.
High elves, blood elves. So it's just like,
Blood elves.
Blood elves. They're the edgy goth elves who are not really that edgy or gothy anymore because they fixed their shit. They fixed their shit by the end of Burning Crusade, actually.
Like, I like WoW. I like playing WoW, but I'm heading for burnout on WoW, but the problem is that I like the people I play WoW with 3 nights a week.
Yeah.
And if I stop playing WoW, well, I'd have to say goodbye to them. So at this point, if the guild ever broke, I would probably just set aside WoW for a while.
Yeah.
But right now, that's what's holding me to the game, is the people I play with, not so much the game itself.
Like, the only other person I regularly play with was Tesser, and he and I just play kind of whatever together. So, like, we're both playing Warframe right now, mm-hmm. free-to-play, and working our way through the story of that. And it's pretty fun. Like, we're finding the weapons we enjoy, and doing missions and whatnot, the little story of the game, and grinding, and yada yada. And it can be fun, being hyperactive space ninjas with lightning bolt powers. So, yep. Videogames and anime and comic books and all that fun stuff.
Geek, nerd.
That's how we roll around here, because goddamn, if we want to do a show about the political nightmare of the last day or so, we could probably do a 2-hour show, but I don't think we want to. I mean, this episode's already past an hour long.
Yeah.
And we just talked about nerd stuff and things we're enjoying versus
the world's on fire and burning.
I'm really, much more be cool about doing like our positive kind of we like stuff and
we
things.
Like this stuff, yeah. As opposed to this stuff makes us incredibly angry. If you want to see stuff that makes us angry, you can see just our Twitter feeds.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, yeah, follow us on Twitter.
Follow us on Twitter and be like, this is what Saverin's mad about today.
I may take a break from Twitter for a little
while. Yeah, there's actually an article today about how Twitter is seeing a real drop in its actual users that are not bots, because
it's just negative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really bad takes and racist and Nazis and frog boys.
There was a Onion article I found amusing that was something like 20% of Twitter's board of directors are now bots. And it's really hard to get rid of them and replace them because they have a golden parachute and stock options.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, mainline, I'm following comedy, and like, I see the politics, and I can get real angry about it. And being mad online, at least I try to stick to like the furry stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, God help you if you try to be mad in person. Oh, you're the worst thing ever.
No. Like, if I want to, like, my sister's recent hospital adventures and all that. And,
That was my fun thing. So my hospital bills, my insurance hadn't been paying any of them. Zero. So it's like, I kept paying the bills.
Welcome to Trump's America!
No, apparently this is, the end result of this was actually a known quantity. So, I keep getting my medical bills, and they're starting to call me and get real insistent with me. I was getting like nasty letters. It's like, I keep pulling out the bills, and there's zero paid by my insurance company. It's like, okay, why aren't you paying my bills? So I called one of the minor ones the other day, got a really nice lady, said, okay, so I've noticed that my insurance there's zero from my insurance on my bills. And she's like, yeah, that we haven't gotten any response from them. And she pulls it up. It's like, oh, you're with Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey. I'm with them too. There's a stupid thing that they do. Every year, you have to contact them and tell them that you have no other insurance provider before they'll pay your bills. Now, I'd done that. I filled out a form in the hospital. They sent me a form after I left the hospital. I filled that out, too. They've called Sarah, who I'm on his insurance policy. They called Sarah. Sarah told them that. I talked to them on the phone. I told them this, too. So after I got off the phone with her, I called them up again and said, hey, what's the status of my claims? It's like, yeah, it looks like we haven't paid off any of these. It's like, and then they ask the question a fifth time. And it's like, no, just like I told you the last 4 times, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, I'll get this. I'll put this in the system and claims will start paying it out. It's like, motherfuckers. you've been holding like almost 45 grand over my head for something I've answered you four times over.
That's crazy.
So that you can avoid paying out money. So you probably use the same insurance plan.
I haven't had this issue.
Yeah.
But I did see my spine doctor for the first time this year the other day. So I'm wondering if I'll get a bill for beyond my copay slash deductible.
Yeah, so just something to be aware of that.
Because I'm going to have a couple of spine procedures this year, more shots.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
So just as an FYI, that was my fun follow-up on Shiva's medical issues.
But I've had this insurance company for like 10 years now, and I've never had this issue happen.
I don't know.
I've been to the doctor in that time.
Yeah, but you haven't gone to like a major hospitalization like I did.
I haven't had a major hospitalization, but I did go to the emergency room a year or two ago. And nothing came of that as far as, like, they ran tests and shit. So, wait, no, they didn't. Okay. Well, and I've had, like, blood work and stuff done. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see once I have these procedures.
So that was my fun thing. That was my major, of the week of, you know, can you please pay some of your part of this so I can know what my portion is so I can actually start paying it? Because I've been waiting for it to, because sometimes you'll get a couple bills from places and then eventually they'll pay it.
Right, yeah. So you usually kind of, I ignore the first round because I know, the insurance is dragging their feet on getting back to them. And then I'll get a revised bill later on, and usually it's just saying your portion is $20, which was like the copay that I already paid in the office or whatever.
Yeah, so I wasn't too worried, but it's now, that was late, mid-April, and it's now almost August, and there's been zero paid out. I'm like...
Yeah, that's a bit longer than the usual.
So, yeah, I turned around and I called the hospital and I called this and I called that. Says, okay, money's coming. Here's my reference number. You know, they said that they're going to start paying out some of these claims. None of the people I called seemed terribly surprised by this.
Mm.
I mean, they're probably used to insurance company fuckery as even more so than we as subscribers are. But
they're
like, oh, okay.
So, one of the things going on and that I'm currently working on my end of things with my publishing to talk about, I guess, what we're doing in our lives right now. So, I'm putting an ad in this catalog, which is a catalog of all independent book publishers, and it gets mailed to over 3,000 independent bookstores so that they can go through the catalog and they see titles that they're interested in, and then they can order them from the distributors. And so I got a full page ad. I'm advertising two books on it. And I was like, when it's like one author, it'll do like an about the author section and a picture of the author. This is two different authors. So I was like, well, instead of that, just put this little blurb about my company because we're trying to get like push out into the mainstream and stuff like that. And I was basically like, you know, we're publishing LGBT fiction, fiction from marginalized communities and stuff like that. You know, which, you know, my standard stuff for that company. And the guy at the Independent Book Publishers Association I'm a member of writes back. And he's like, okay, I got all your information. Oh, and by the way, kudos for publishing LGBT science fiction and fantasy. I have a LGBT book blog here.
Ah.
And he told me the name of it. And I was like, how? It's just one of those small world kind of things. Like, wow, how do I get the gay dude? He's like the programming director.
That's for this awesome. Thing.
And I was just kind of really tickled about it. I was like, oh, cool. I've made a connection. So, you know, I followed him on Twitter, and
that's really neat.
I'll see if maybe I can like send him a couple of books, you know, maybe he'll write a review or something like that. But
that's cool.
I thought it was really cool. So I'm getting this is for, Argyle, my more mainstream.
Yeah. I saw you put something out on Facebook about Argyle the other day.
Yep. I started an ad campaign for Tim Sussman's new book, The Tower and the Fox.
Is that furry or is that just people?
It has furries in it. It's magical realism, historical fantasy kind of thing. This is Kyle's book that he's writing under his human alter ego. And it's okay to say that. He's put this information out because he wants Kyle fans to be able to find this book, even though Kyle's name is not on the cover of it. But it's a series he'd been writing for a while, and it actually completely rewritten book one. The overall series is called The Collations. And a collation is about 100 years ago in the timeline of the book. These creatures were created with magic. And the creatures are anthropomorphic animals. And they were used for magic stuff and things like that. And like, there's been sort of a civil rights thing where like, they're kind of seen as second class citizens, you know? But the main magic school was like attacked at some point. And like their numbers of magic users have been decimated. So they're basically, they're trying to get any students that they can. So the focus is on Kip, who is a fox, who is their first collation student. Like, opening the doors and actually teaching a collation magic is like a big controversial thing, because there's some wizards there that still don't want to do that, you know.
There are creations slash,
they're second class citizens. This is like, you know, I don't want to make analogies that are too grandiose, but it's sort of like desegregating schools. You know, we can't let a woman do that. We can't let a black person do that. Anyway, Kip's classmate is their first female student. And she's human. So you have a mix of human and anthro-animal characters. And Kip's best friend is this is Otter, about his age. And it's planned to be a 3 or 4 part series. I can't remember exactly because I have a lot of different... He's writing a lot of different book series, and I don't remember how many books are in each one. Like, Love Match is a 3 or 4 part series also. So the first book came out at Anthrocon. So it just came out this month. And I started an ad campaign on Facebook to promote that. So I'm promoting it and Kismet by Watts Martin, the sci-fi book that we released in January, in this book catalog to go out to mainstream booksellers. And, you know, yeah, that's not a promise that booksellers are actually going to order them.
But at least they're out there.
Just that they can, and they're advertised, and I'm putting their covers and their blurbs in front of people that can make that decision.
That's neat.
And yeah, just trying to like grow that part of the business. And I don't know if I mentioned it on here, but we've also started working with Ursula Vernon. Ursula is mostly known in the writing world for her children's books, for like Harriet the Hamster Princess series of children's books, which I ordered for my niece. But she also writes stories for grown-ups, and she writes those under a pseudonym because she doesn't want parents buying them and thinking, oh, I'm going to read this to my kid like I would Harriet the Hamster Princess, when it's obviously more grown-up, you know, story matter. And she publishes those under the name T. Kingfisher. And she has several ebooks out as T. Kingfisher, and they're not available in print. So we're doing the print editions.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
So we've just released the first one. It's called The Raven and the Reindeer. It's one that she published in ebook last year. We've published in print this year. It's on Amazon. And after the ad campaign for Tower and the Fox runs, I'm going to run an ad campaign for Raven and the Reindeer as well. But yeah, it's really cool working with Ursula. She's really down to earth. You know, and I just need to, next thing I need to do is email her back and get the files for whatever the next book is we're doing. I'd like to do either Byrony and Roses or Jackalope Wives and Other Tales next. Jackalope Wives and Other Tales contains her award-winning story, Jackalope Wives, which was on like Locus Mag originally. And I think it's was nominated or won a Nebula Award. I don't recall. She's won like a bunch of stuff lately. Like, this story's been nominated for multiple things. And she's got like some of her other short stories for various anthologies and other things she's written in this collection. So this is a really exciting time for me, you know, to be working with Ursula and, you know, to have some, and this is non-furry stuff.
Mm-hmm.
These are like retellings of fairy tales with modern twists. And like Raven and the Reindeer is like, there's a lesbian romance in it, but it's based on Hans Christian Andersen's The Snow Queen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a retelling of that story. And Byrony and Roses is basically Beauty and the Beast.
Neat.
Which I listened to the audiobook version of on some road trip or other. It might have been to Haven Con. I'm not sure. Did you drive with me to Haven? I can't remember. Did you ride with me or did you go separately?
No, we came together.
And that Haven Con did get funded?
Yes.
They extended it 2 days. Mm-hmm. They managed to meet all of their funding. So, yes, Haven Con 4 is going actually forward. Happening.
Yes.
And Shane, I talked to him about it, actually said that this puts him in a good position in future years to not have to do this again.
Good.
So there was a lot of, it wasn't just, this was a lot of just let's solidify everything going forward. So yeah. It was ambitious, but it sounds like they needed to do that in order to get their feet underneath them to be more dynamic moving forward in years. So yeah. I'm really glad that Haven Con managed to pull it off.
And I do intend to apply to be a vendor there again for Haven Con 4 and to bring the furry presence. But I also want to be there to promote my non-furry LGBT titles as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have to figure out how to arrange that all on the table. But it's a good outlet for me to advertise to the audience that I'm interested in reaching. It's also I'm also intending to apply for a table at WorldCon next year. WorldCon is going to be in San Jose in 2018. Kyle and Watts and Ryan Campbell are all in that area, so they're all going to attend. They're going to be on some furry panels. And I was like, well, if I get a table, then you guys could totally like come to the table and sign some books and like, you know, try to make like do like a whole thing with it. So I check up on WorldCon every now and then to see if they're open for vendor subs yet or not. But
WorldCon's kind of expensive to go to.
It's a lot. Okay, so the I think the registration fees are a little bit higher than like typical for your furry con, but you know what? Since it's in San Jose, it's actually in the same convention center as FC.
Oh,
so I will be very familiar with the area. So I'm looking forward to doing that. Tira and I had kind of a so-so time at the WorldCon we did in San Antonio, but like with more furry writers around that I know well, and I'll actually have, you know, at the table, and, you know, and they'll be on some panels providing some content to the con and stuff like that. And I'm looking forward to just spending time with those guys, you know, be out there in San Jose with a table again. So yeah, I've got some plans on here on actually pushing and expanding my company and doing, going in a different direction, but also still, you know, still publishing like a lot of furry stuff under Fur Planet, because Anthrocon was huge with 29 new titles. We're actually talking about starting to release books off of the con cycle,
because
it's just so much all at once.
To try and up ramp for that.
Yeah, and it's hard for any one title to really stand out sometimes when there's like a ton of shit that's brand new. And, you know, it also allows us to like release stuff on our own time instead of rushing to meet Anthrocon or a particular furry convention. And I could do more prep work and advertising beforehand to get review copies out and things like that. So
maybe save a couple of really good big ones for AC, but
yeah. Now that's not to say there won't still be a ton of shit at AC, because I know there will be. because a lot of the artists like work on AC as a schedule. Like they'll do like their whole year of work, various commissions and sites and pinups and their own comics and Patreon and stuff, and then they'll have a year's worth of stuff to put into an art book for Anthrocon. So that's not going to change. There's still going to be a lot of that. But for for some of our other stuff, like I've got a new comic that's ready to go, that I will probably put live on the site here very soon, probably in August. Tidal Wave by Demacour. I'm not sure how to pronounce her name.
Oh, I love her work.
But yeah, she's the artist that did Cinderfrost. Is doing Cinderfrost, I should say.
I love Cinderfrost.
Have you read Tidal Wave? It's being posted on her FA right now. It's a straight story. It's a short comic. It's very cute. Basically, a girl has had a crush on her guy friend for ages and basically decides to tease him into action. She takes off her swimsuit top and she's like, I don't want to have any tan lines. Something like that, which is funny because furries. And she's like, oh, but I have to put sunblock on my nipples. I don't want to get them burned. So, you know, and of course he's like, you know,
pant.
Sweat drop. You know, and of course, yeah, leads to the Yaff. But I've got that in print, so we'll be selling that soon, and that'll be off the con schedule. We'll just put that out and see what happens. We'll still sell them. We'll probably still sell a lot of them at the first con it appears at, because the convention buying audience seems to be very different from the online buying audience. Like, I noticed probably a lot of crossover there, but they seem to be two distinct groups at the same time. Interesting times. I'm busy with For Planet. The day job.
It's the day job.
Goes apace, you know?
All I can say, the new day job I have is both great and, oh my God. You know, I got a huge pay bump going to this, and it's become very apparent that I am going to earn it.
So it's a lot more work than...
It's not a lot more work. It's a lot more taxing and responsibilities, because I'm dealing with like 25 or so different production environments, which means like 25 or so different little banks. But if I make a mistake, it could have really big impacts on them. Plus the complexity of this particular product is so, it touches on so many different things, interacts with so many different vendors, and there's so many moving parts that it's not a knowledge learning curve, it's a learning cliff, and I am climbing as fast as I can go, and I haven't seen the top. It's not like, you know, I'm discovering new things. It's like I'm looking ahead of me and there's just this wall of learning. And I'm going and I'm learning so much. It's great, but
I was going to say, this is going to be really good for your skill set overall.
This is going to blow the walls off my skill set. I mean, in 10 years or something, whenever I move on, if I move on, what I can do. I said this to Sarah the other day and to Siam. It's like, I never thought getting fired would be the best thing that ever happened to me.
Totally, yeah.
And that's a weird thing to say, but when I got laid off at my old job prior to the tech company I spent 6 months at, I probably wouldn't have gone anywhere in that company. My skills,
you were comfortable.
I was comfortable. I love my teammates. I love the product. I knew it backwards, forward, and sideways. And while my skill set was still growing, it wasn't this. It was kind of, I wouldn't call it stagnating, but we weren't really on the cutting edge anymore. We were just merely comfortably adequate. I mean, we still did a good job, but
that's my life. Comfortably adequate.
No. But it wasn't, it's not this. It's not using a lot of the new, the difference between my old job and the new job is, it, the old job, and this one is take my old job and then modernize it, make it a ton more dynamic, make it so much more flexible. This is taking, and it's supercharging my old skill set, and I've already learned a fuck ton.
Sounds awesome.
But
very intensive.
It is incredibly intense. Mm. And it is, thank God I learn and retain like I do, because I came out of today feeling like I had just been slam danced with trying to figure shit out. And I'm also in the new part, so I'm trying to make sure I stay ahead of their expectations. I don't want to seem like a bad hire. So far, I've been getting good noise, but I'm always afraid that when there's some kind of gap that's occurred that I'm not... Like I said, I don't want them to feel like I'm a bad hire, because I'm enjoying it and I really want to stay because it's mm-hmm. great.
But I know your higher-ups know that there's a learning...
Oh, God, I've been reassured for... ages that from the get-go that there's going to be 3 months before you really get your feet underneath you. And I haven't even gotten to the stuff I'm going to be doing in a couple of months from now, which is like late night deployments, going on call. Yeah, so there's still shit that's coming down the pipeline that I'm going to be expected to do.
It almost sounds a little bit like Panther's position. From what Saverin's told me, like, I know Panther's gotten up at like 3 a.m. to fix a problem or a deployment, shit like that. But also similar kind of thing, like if he fucks something up, it has repercussions for their clients and stuff. So it's a very responsible position.
Very responsible. And you can tank someone's, you know, banking systems really easily. It's good because what we do will have minimal impact on the bank itself. Mm-hmm. Because, okay, so they've got their own system where they store all their financial data.
Right.
And that's not us.
Yeah.
We basically go out, talk to them, and get all the information and then mirror it out in a form that people can get to an external. And they can do a little bit with it. But for the most part, what we do, we're not going to, like, wipe somebody's financial data off the map. It'll still be safe somewhere else. But we can fuck it up so that suddenly the entire what's-its-face can't...
Oh, like the link between the two can't connect to the data.
Or, like, basically, if we fuck up, we can wipe out an institution's ability to do online banking until we get it fixed. Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, imagine, you know, you have Chase or Wells Fargo and you needed to pay a bill and you sign in and suddenly your app can't connect. You go to your computer. You can't pay that bill. You can't see your paycheck. It's still safe because, you know, the bank is still talking to, like, all the processors. Your money's there. You could walk into a bank and take care of it.
Yeah.
But the ability to do all that that people rely on outside of walking into a physical branch, mm-hmm. we can hose that. Mm-hmm. So not fucking up is really freaking critical because everybody relies on online banking these days.
So it's like not fucking up is job one.
It really is, especially if you're in, you know, support and you're working with live data. Mm-hmm. You know, because you got the developers that write it and they can push it out a bad, you know, bit of code.
Yeah,
and that happens. And it can be really bad, but then it's at least not my fault.
Right.
And it's also gone through a lot of investigation, a lot of double checking, a lot of QA before it gets that far. And sometimes stuff still slips through. But when it comes to, like, it's already out there in the wild, it's already being used, but there's a minor little glitch that we have to fix. Mm. And if we do that wrong... yeah.
Right.
So it can be very bad if you're working in production environments to fuck up. At least when, like, the devs and such are working, they're all working in test databases.
Yeah, yeah.
They can hose that, and yeah, it'll be a painful, and it'll put everybody back, but they'll pull an old copy, you know, restore everything, and basically reset it. And all the data...
That's basically what Tyrion does.
Yeah, and all the data there... you know, they can recreate it. It might be painful, but you haven't just locked Joe Schmo out of his ability to do online banking.
Yeah.
So if you hose that, it's a pain in the ass, not the end of the world. We fuck up. And then, you know, suddenly, you know, you take out an entire bank's ability. And that's bad. That's really, really bad.
Yeah, so there's definitely some pressure there. But sounds like it'd be really good for your career, though. So
that's good. And it's really interesting. Like, that's one reason why I like support, is, like, it's a pretty much a nonstop game of what went wrong and figuring out puzzles all day long. It's very brain engaging. Like, I can't say I'm bored because there's always something new to learn. And it was like that in the old job. You do get your routine things where, okay, this doesn't work right. The devs haven't fixed it. So you have to go and shoehorn in like a workaround for the next couple weeks until they finish writing that round of code. So you do have like the one and dones and keep doing the same thing. But you also have all the weird shit, the one-offs that you have to figure out what went wrong and then, you know, figure out, is it a user doing something screwy? Or did the devs write bad code? Or did we implement something wrong? It's
a lot of moving parts.
So many moving parts. And I didn't think growing up that I would be working in computers. I didn't think, I thought I'd be a comic book artist. But I also didn't have much in the way of computer, you know.
Access.
Yeah. We had very minimal. And what we had, me and my sister were not allowed to change anything or tinker or at all. You're allowed to pretty much open up the word processor, type, save, and be done. Or you could play a game.
Yeah.
I couldn't go in and see how things work and, you know, learn anything in depth. And I didn't get that until college. And even further, I didn't get even more into that until I started getting my first basic support job, which when you're supporting, like, Microsoft Office, it's, you read a lot of KBs, you kind of implement other people's solutions. It's not really too much digging, but that gave me a taste for it, and I've just kind of gone further and further down that rabbit hole, because I discovered I really like figuring out puzzles.
It's really cool to figure that out, you know, what you want to do, what kind of person you are, and what kind of career, like, works best for you.
But this kind of thing is when you're in school, you know, and you're, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't even on my radar. I had no idea that this was even a possibility.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show you, I mean, you never know what you're going to discover later on in life, and it's going to be your passion.
I didn't discover I wanted to publish till I was 31, you know, and that's not a question I would have been able to answer as a teenager. The opposite, actually. I thought I was going to be a computer scientist when I was in school, and that turned out not to be the case. And, you know, I'm fine. I mean, I have a day job. It pays okay, and it is what it is. But, you know, I guess I have the bad luck that my passion is not an incredibly lucrative one.
I looked out in that case.
But it's really, God, what's the word? Oh, I've been publishing it. I can't think of the word. It's really fulfilling in other ways. It feeds my soul, you know?
And I guess I looked out in that case and I found something that fulfills me as a
person.
As a person, as my main career.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel incredibly lucky that I actually found something where I'm making money doing what I love, and given my choice, I mean, I would probably rather write or something else, but I also don't know if I've got the moxie to be able to sit that down and do that 24/7.
It takes a lot of work to get to a point where you can write or art as a full-time career. And yeah, the people that do, this is why, like, actually paying artists for their work is like such a big deal, because the people that can actually do that as a career have put so much time and effort and done so many shitty drawings before they got to the point where they were like, okay, I can do this. We should probably wrap things up. It's 10:40.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're at hour 45 on the show. Easy.
Okay, cool.
So save it before it gets lost.
Yep. So we're just going to wrap it up. You can find us on Twitter at Notcast. You can send us emails, notcast@foxstuffers.com. You can send us messages on our Tumblr, notcast.tumblr.com. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/notcast. If you like the show and want to throw some money our way, feel free to do so. Buck an episode, it really helps, you know, makes us happy. And you can find me on Twitter at Saverin Drake.
You can find me on Twitter at Fuzzwolf, and my other info is at fuzzwolf.com. Has links there to For Planet, Bad Dog, and all that.
And I'm just Chimera on Twitter. Chimaera, because Shiva is always taken everywhere.
Okay, so we're going to wrap it up. Next week we'll have another show. Feel free to write in. Tell us we're a bunch of weebs or whatever. And on that note, good night.
Oh, it's my turn, is it? Okay.
Yeah, I did it last week.
And big balls.